Today's presenters are Colin Alcock and Rick Mercadante. Colin has worked in IBM Kick's product support since 1989. He joined the CSAS Transaction Gateway Change Team in 2006, where he's responsible for assisting IBM support teams and customers worldwide, advising on CSAS Transaction Gateway configuration, diagnosing the cause of reported problems, and providing code fixes. Rick has been involved with the TX Series product in both the system test and support capacities for over 9 years, and with the CSAS product support for over 6 years. In this capacity, he is responsible for focusing on all aspects of customer support for the CTG and TX Series products, and works directly with CTG product development for serviceability and technical reviews. At this time, I'd like to turn the presentation over to Colin and Richard.
Hello, I'm Colin Alcock, and along with Rick Picardi, I'll be discussing Kick's Transaction Gateway version 7.0 and 7.1 enhancements. Kick's Transaction Gateway version 7.0 became available in December 2006, and version 7.1 was released in December 2007. The agenda for today's talk will be a brief overview of Kick's Transaction Gateway. We'll cover the removal of TCP 62 support, introduce Apple ID and origin data, and IPIC connectivity, which leads to channels and containers. Request monitoring is the last item, which I'll present, at which point I'll hand over to Rick for his section of the presentation, where he'll cover Kick's Transaction Gateway statistics with an overview, reasons to use the new statistics, and how to obtain the data. Before we go too much further, I'd like to clarify some of the terms we'll be using today. In this presentation, when we refer to Kick's, I'll be referring to Kick's, so I suspect Rick might be referring to CICS. We will mean Kick's Transaction Server for ZOS, and Kick's TG, or CICS TG, is Kick's Transaction Gateway. It's worth noting that Kick's TG can communicate with Kick servers on other platforms, and that Kick's TG can run on ZOS and also on distributed operating systems. Local mode, or two-tier mode, refers to a configuration where... I realise I haven't told you to move on to the next slide. We're now on foil 3, which is the terms of the terms that I'll be using in the presentation. Let's wait for it all to catch up. Thank you. The local mode, also known as two-tier mode, refers to a configuration where Kick's TG supplied classes and Java client programs communicate directly with the supplied connectivity components, and there's no gateway daemon. Remote mode, or three-tier mode, refers to a configuration where the gateway daemon is invoked by a Java client via TCP IP or SSL connections. Moving on to foil 4. The overview, Kick's Transaction Gateway provides a basis for J2EE or JCA applications, which can support throughput of thousands of transactions a second. Security is provided using the standard secure sockets layer or SSL implementation, and there's good integration with Kick's and ZOS. The multi-threaded technology and load balancing capabilities of Kick's Transaction Gateway maximize the scalability and availability of the solution. Kick's TG uses the Kick's Distributed Program Link, or DPL, to interface with Kick's programs, so minimal changes are required to Kick's to allow access to the Kick's programs, and usually no changes are required to comm area-based Kick's programs themselves. Foil 5. When Kick's TG version 7 was announced, it was also announced that TCP 62, or APPC, over a TCP network would be removed at a later date. With Kick's TG version 7.1, that TCP 62 support for the protocol support has been removed, because with ZOS version 1 release 8, AnyNet, which provided the ZOS support for TCP 62, has been removed. The functionality of APPC over a TCP network is now provided by Enterprise Extender, which is exactly the same as an APPC connection as far as the configuration of Kick's Transaction Gateway is concerned. For more details, see Migrating an SNA Connection from TCP 62 to Enterprise Extender, which is document number GC34-6889, and there's a doc link for that at the end of the presentation. And that's the end of 4.5. I'm now on foil 6, which is IP Interconnectivity Protocol. IPIC is an IP-based kicks-to-kicks interconnectivity protocol, which is new with Kick's Transaction Server for ZOS version 3.2. It supports XA and SSL and extended workflow management. In local mode, it allows XA and SSL support direct to KIX, and there's asserted identity, and that is attach sec equals identify on the relevant connection definition in KIX on client authenticated and local connections. ECI timeout is supported on all platforms over IPIC. Previously, ECI timeout was not available for the XCI connections, so they weren't available on a KIX transaction gateway running on ZOS. The Java-based protocol also allows for an increased offload of the KIX TG for ZOS workload to ZAP engines. IPIC also supports channels and containers, which we'll look at shortly. If we move on to foil 7. Having introduced IPIC, we'll look at how to configure IPIC connections. First, we need a TCP/IP service in KIX. In this foil, we've configured a TCP/IP service of IPIC test with a user replaceable module of DFH ISAIP, which is new in KIX TS version 3.2, which manages the auto install of IPIC connections. We specified port number 18008, as this is the port which KIX will be listening to. We'll be listening on for this IPIC TCP/IP service. In the protocol, we specify IPIC, and for a transaction, we specify CISS, which is a KIX supply transaction which acquires an IPCon connection in KIX. This is the auto install version which I'm showing you here. There's a non auto install version which requires further configuration, but a bit complicated for this scenario. Moving on to foil 8. We've looked at the KIX configuration. Now looking at the KIX TG configuration, I've got a screenshot of the KIX transaction gateway for Windows configuration tool. The server specified is called KIX IPIC, which is an arbitrary name, and we'll see that later on. The network protocol is IPIC, and the host name of the ZOS machine is specified in there as well. In the port parameter, we specify the target port of 18008, which is the one we specified KIX to listen to in the TCP/IP service. A quick note here is that for KIX transaction gateway on ZOS, when it starts, it will normally attempt to load up the EXCI support. If you're only using IPIC connections, there's little point in having to configure the EXCI configuration because you might not be using it. So this potentially unnecessary configuration task can be avoided by setting an environment variable CTG underscore EXCI underscore init equals no, and that will have the effect of preventing the EXCI libraries being loaded at startup, and message CTG 8667I EXCI supported disabled will be written to the log. Moving on to foil 9. Because the IPIC protocol is implemented in the KIX transaction gateway Java classes, a KIX CLI-L command won't list the IPIC-connected KIX regions. And the diagram on this foil 9 shows an overview of the IPIC test, which we'll be performing later to show that the configuration was successful. We're going to use sample program ECI B1, which will connect over a TCP/IP connection to the default KIX transaction gateway port of 2006 on KIX transaction gateway machine 9.20.216.75. KIXTG will in turn connect over IPIC to the specified TCP/IP service port and 18008, which we configured on ZOS machine winmvs20.hursley.ibm.com. ECI B1 is shipped with KIX Transaction Gateway and demonstrates the basic use of the KIX Transaction Gateway API. It launches a transaction on the chosen server and the date and time is returned. On to foil 10. Okay. Here we can see an example of running ECI B1. It's invoked with the command java.com.ibm.ctg.samples.eci.ecib1 9.20.216.75 and 2006. This will invoke ECI B1 and directs it to KIX transaction gateway at the specified IP address and port. We're then presented with a list of servers, KIX IPIC, IYCKZCFA, and CFA TCP/IP, which we defined. And we've selected server 1, KIX IPIC. The result of running the target program on KIX is the date and time, which are returned at the bottom of the screen. Moving on to foil 11. This shows two schematics of how the KIX transaction gateway IPIC connectivity is implemented. Number one shows SNA and TCP/IP connectivity being provided by KIX transaction gateway supplied client daemon code in local mode. The IPIC driver is embedded in the KIX transaction gateway supplied resource adapter and provides the IP connectivity between KIX2G Java programs and KIX. Number two shows remote mode with KIX transaction gateway resource adapter remotely accessing the KIX transaction gateway daemon on ZOS. The gateway daemon provides the option to connect to KIX on ZOS via EXEI or IPIC. If the KIX transaction gateway daemon were running on a distributed platform, SNAR, TCP/IP, or IPIC would be the connection options. Moving on to FOIL 12. So moving on from IPIC, we've got channels and containers. Channels and containers were first introduced as part of KIX business transaction services as a mechanism for moving large amounts of data around between KIX programs. With KIX TS version 3.2, channels and containers have been made available for DPL programs outside of KIX BTS processes. They represent a way of sidestepping the long-standing 32K COM area restriction and provide the flexibility of overloading of copybooks and allow for efficient transmission of potentially large quantities of data between programs and systems. Okay, on FOIL 13. What are channels and containers? Containers are named blocks of data which effectively have no enforced size limit in KIX Transaction Gateway or KIX. And channels are a grouping of one or more containers which can be passed between systems and programs. Again, there's no enforced limit on the number of containers in a channel. The only limit is the amount of storage that's available, although only one channel can be passed on an individual request. The recommendation is that many smaller containers are used rather than one larger container, and we'll touch again on this shortly. And FOIL 14. Summarising channels and containers, they're only available to KIX Transaction Gateway for ECI calls when using an IPIC connection. There's no support for channels and containers over EXEI, SNA, nor TCP/IP connections. Okay, and on to FOIL 15. Here we've got a diagram that's showing what's expected to be a typical request of flowing a channel from KIX Transaction Gateway application to a KIX target program and back. On the left, the KIX Transaction Gateway application creates containers A, B, and C and adds them to the channel. This channel is then flowed to KIX as part of a DPL request. On the right, the KIX program receives the channel, and during its run, it updates containers A and C. When the KIX program returns the channel, which still contains containers A, B, and C, only the changed containers A and C are flowed. These updates are then reflected in the containers on the KIX transaction gateway side, and it's by flowing only the updated containers which is allowing for the transmission efficiencies. And this is why we recommend that many smaller containers are used, as one change will only affect the small amount of data in that container. Moving on to page 16. There are two types of containers which can be specified. There's the bit type, which denotes binary data, which is not subjected to code page conversion. The alternative to that is char, which contains character data, and in this case it is subject to code page conversion. KIX Transaction Gateway encodes the container data in a UTF-8 code page, which is specified as a CCS ID, which is then flowed on the container. Any data conversion flow occurs in KIX rather than on the KIX transaction gateway side. Okay, on to page 17. Having introduced channels and containers, we have to provide an API or an application programming interface so that they can be accessed, and indeed this API has been introduced in the KIX transaction gateway, J2EE, and base classes. I don't want to go into the details of application programming in this presentation, but I would recommend that anybody interested in programming to the Channels and Containers API have a look at the supplied sample program ECIB3.java, which demonstrates the creation and the use of Channels and Containers in a KIX Transaction Gateway environment. The ECIB3 sample program requires server program ECO3, which is also supplied to be installed on the target KIX region. And moving on to 4.18. Apple ID is a Kix Transaction Gateway version 7.1 new parameter. It's configured by the systems admin, and it allows a gateway daemon to be uniquely identified in a network. The 8-character alphanumeric fields used as an Apple ID network qualifier for IPIC. One note on the bottom of that foil that it's not tested for uniqueness by Kix Transaction Gateway, so you need to be careful that that is a unique Apple ID which is configured. The Apple ID is used in IPIC connections. It's quoted in TCP/IP connections. It's also written out on the ZOS console and gateway daemon log, and it's used in the monitoring exits, which we'll see later, and origin data. It's also written out in SMS records and statistics, which Rick will be covering later. Moving on to 4.19. Origin data. The origin data was implemented to allow us to get meaningful data from the request monitoring exits, which we'll talk about next. The origin data provides a way of tracking where an ECI or a gateway request came from. The origin data is passed from the client app through all the Kix Transaction Gateway and Kix regions involved in the transaction, and amongst other things contains the Apple ID, transaction ID, user ID, client IP address, and port. Most of this data will originate from the Java client application, although in remote mode, some of it will refer back to the Kix Transaction Gateway daemon. And on to page 20. I touched on the request monitoring exits, which explained why we'd implemented Apple ID and origin data. One of the major enhancements of Kix Transaction Gateway version 7.1 is the introduction of the request monitoring exits. They allow the capture of data relating to entry and exit of work through the Kix Transaction Gateway and exit of work from the gateway client classes and entry of, that, of those responses. We supply sample exits in the samples C exits directory so that you can use these to learn how to write your own exits. Alternatively, third-party products can use the exits to provide process data and provide them in a readable form. IBM Tivoli Megamon XE for Kix Transaction Gateway on ZOS already provides this functionality. And moving on to foil 21. A little bit more about the exits. They can collect data on the request when it leaves the gateway classes. When they leave the gateway classes in the client application, and also on entry and exit through the gateway daemon in both directions independently. They're stackable, so that you can have more than one exit running on an exit or entry point. It's worth noting that they run in line with whatever work they are monitoring, so any processing time within the exit will delay the request by that amount of processing time. Any exception or runtime error detected in the exits will cause that exit to be disabled. And now I'll hand over to Rick for the talk on statistics.
Thanks, Colin. As part of CGG version 7, we introduced a new feature called the KixTG Statistics. What this allows you to do is it contains 142 different statistics. We can monitor things such as thread polls, requested processes, processes that are connected to the gateway, the IPIX connections, and client daemon processes that are connected to servers. The statistics are broken down into originally three categories. They were startup statistics, current statistics, and lifetime statistics. In 7.1, we added a new category called interval statistics. Originally, there were 36 different kinds of statistics available. So in 7.1, that was greatly enhanced. Moving on to slide 23. What are the reasons that you would want to use the KixTG statistics? There are two common uses for these statistics, measuring systems performance as well as measuring your system's resource usage. The statistics provided provide a wide range of metrics that you can use to measure both your performance and your resources. Also, you can use them as a monitoring tool that will give you the ability to track transactions and data as they are processed. One thing to keep in mind is that monitoring is performance intensive, whereas the statistics is not. Moving on to slide 24. A couple more reasons to use the KICS-TG statistics. One is capacity planning. By using statistics that are gathered over a set period of time, you can measure the impact of configuration changes. This is a valuable process when you're trying to determine the correct configuration. Sometimes when you are changing your configuration for your KICS-TG, you just need to get that feel-good snapshot of how the system's actually running. In the past, you could make changes to your configuration, and you really didn't know how it impacted the performance of the overall system. With the statistics now, you can make changes to your configuration and actually see what the impact is of those changes. Moving on to slide 25. A couple more reasons to use the statistics. Problem determination. In the past, the only way to determine if you were having what was causing a problem in your system, be it a performance issue or transactions not running as they should, was to turn on trace. When a production environment, turning trace on is usually not a good option, only in an extreme case. By using the statistics, you can now find out if you're running short on a certain resource, if you have transactions that are hanging, what the throughput is on transactions. Better to troubleshoot a bottleneck in your systems. Statistics that you gather are gathered real time and become as much easier to track a problem down when you're looking at things that are actually happening at the time you're looking at them. Another possibility for your statistics would be for if you act as a hosting service or for billing information. By using the statistics pack, you can track the number of transactions between a region. You can overall transactions for the system. Statistics are gathered on a 24-hour basis and are snapshot at that end of day. Moving on to slide 26. Where can statistics be collected? Statistics are collected from the gateway daemon, and the values apply only to gateway daemons, to the gateway daemon that they were connected to. Statistics are based on a Java client application that runs in remote mode. There are no statistics collected when you're running in local mode. The basic statistics on the client daemon were added in version 7.1. Moving on to slide 27. What will these statistics tell me about my system? Well, as I said earlier, they're broken down into four different categories. You have startup statistics, and these are statistics that are based on the configuration of the gateway daemon when it was started. The current statistics are statistics that are calculated at the time that you ask for them. So those are actually real-time statistics. Lifetime statistics are stats that represent the value calculated over the lifetime of the gateway daemon. So if your gateway has been up for 10 hours, those statistics would represent the activity that occurred during that time. Now, interval statistics, which is something that was added in 7.1, are statistics that are collected over a set period of time. So you can go in and tell it you want to measure statistics for a 10-second or 20-second time slot, and those statistics will be representative of that actual time shot. Moving on to slide 28. These are some of the different categories of statistics that are available. We have connection managers, stats, worker threads, kick servers, which would be all the kick servers that are in your gateway, that are running through your gateway. You can do statistics for a particular server. You can do IPICs, EXCI, TCP/IP, and SNA. You can do gateway daemon stats, protocol handler stats, and a new one in 7.1, the systems environment. This one really comes in handy, as it will tell you the environment that is actually in play as the gateway is running. Moving on to slide 29. How do I get all these statistics? Statistics are represented by a statistical ID. It's a string that's used to display or query a particular statistical value. So a resource group would be like your connection manager grouping. A statistical type is a single character that tells you whether or not they are lifetime statistics, they are current statistics, the different types that I described. Then it's followed by a stat ID extension, which describes the type of statistics that you're trying to collect. A good example of that would be to use ALLOC, which is the allocation of connection manager threads. Moving on to slide 30. Here are a group of the different types of statistics that are available within the CM or connection manager grouping. As you can see, it's the number of connections managers that are currently allocated, the total number of connection managers, the number of connection managers that are waiting, the number of times a particular connection has timed out or the timeout limit has been hit, the initial number of connection managers, and the maximum number of connection managers. Those two values are based on what your any file is set to. Moving on to slide 31, a little bit more on how I get these statistics. There's three ways that you can go in and pull your statistics. On a ZOS platform, you can go in SDSF and do a get stats. On a distributed platforms, from a command line, you can do CDG admin get stats, or you can use the API and programmatically gather up your stats. The sample program that is available is the CDG stat 1 and is found in the CDG samples C stats, and the program is CTG stat 1. Moving on to slide 32. Here's an example of using the SDSF from your console. It's a pretty straightforward command. In this particular case, we're telling it we want to do statistics on the gateway daemon, which would be the GD. Moving on to slide 33. Here's a sample output from using the CTG admin on CTG admin from a command line. as you can see, we're telling it to do stats on the gateway daemon. The output you see there is what all is available by just doing straight gateway daemon stats. Moving on to slide 34. Here's an example of how you would do it programmatically. This is the output from the CTG Stat 1 program. It's all the same information that you would see either of the other two ways. Moving on to slide 35. In summary, the CTG 7.1 continues to support all the latest Kix features. In addition, we've added the latest IPIC and channels and containers. We've enhanced the statistics and monitoring capabilities. Just as we've added the statistics for the client daemon in 7.1, this feature will continue to be enhanced in upcoming releases. Moving on to slide 36. Here are some additional Kix TG resources that are available to you on the web. The first one is the 7.1 Information Center, which is complete documentation for release 7.1. That is for all platforms. We have a book on the channels and containers feature. We have a new red book that is currently in draft format, but it is downloadable. The final version should be coming soon. And the last link there is the all the supported software that runs with the gateway. Those are the versions of software that have been tested and are currently supported. Moving on to slide 37. Here are some additional WebSphere links if anybody is interested in them. I'll now turn the call back over to Elijah.
Thank you, Colin and Richard, for a great presentation.
We'll go first to Michael Giacchino.
Hi, I was close, but thank you. I have a question on CICS with the IPIC support. With EXCI support, failover could be done via the DFHXC URM module or I guess that's probably the best way to have done it. Is there similar support with IPIC to be able to allow CTG to decide which connection to go to rather than leave it in the hands of the client? And I have two more questions along those lines. If I could, want me to ask them now or wait?
It's Colin Alcock here. I'll take that. There isn't an equivalent of the DFHXC URM exit in Kix for IPIC.
So if a target is selected, a target region, and that target is not healthy, how do we route to a different target?
It would have to be done programmatically.
Programmatically on this part, in the CTG or at the client?
At the client, assuming that you didn't have any other mechanism of workload management between the gateway and Kix.
All right. Could we use something like Sysplex Distributor or port sharing then from CTG into Kix to pick a different...
Because it's an IP-based protocol, I believe you can, but I would probably be better to go away and check that and get back to you.
All right.
I was just going to say, no, because IPIC is an IP-based protocol, it does flow over IP connections, so it should be able to manage them in a standard IP manner.
All right, good. some more questions along those lines. With EXA, there was a limit of 100 connections, and that can be raised to 250 with a farm in MDS or so. Is there any limit with the IFIX support?
Not in the same way that EXCI was managed, no.
And there was an implied recommendation, explicit recommendation in some cases, that there would be one CTG per TOR with EXCI. Has that changed at all with IFIX support, or do you still recommend a gateway serve one TOR?
I'm not sure whether we have a recommendation for that, actually. I haven't seen one. I'd have to get back to you on that one and talk to our architecture guys and see what their recommendation is.
All right, great. Thanks.
Okay.
And with no more questions currently in the queue, I would like to provide everyone a final reminder to ask a question or make a comment. That is star one. I'll pause for another moment. And it looks like Michael Giantino has re-queued.
My lucky day, right, Stu? All right, nobody else is asking, so I have another question. There was a discussion about monitoring, and I wasn't sure at what level monitor records were being written. If it's like every instance of a message that comes across, kind of like a transaction in CSCS, is it one-to-one? And can that record, if you turn on monitoring, be correlated through the SMS data with the associated CSCS record?
I'm not sure if Rick can hear that one, so I'll take it. The monitoring, we have interval monitoring in Kitch Transaction Gateway, and we have request level monitoring as well, just thinking about it. So the SMF, the statistics can be cut to SMF. The only way you could tie an individual record to another one, I think, would be by monitoring it with the request exit. So I'm not certain that we could tie it down to an individual request in KIX Transaction Gateway. In KIX.
All right, so maybe by use of, because I see that you had added some new fields, Trinity user, I forgot what they were, I don't have the screen up, but there was a bunch of four or five new fields that were added.
That would be in the origin data, yeah. So that would be recorded.
And that would be part of the SMF record, right?
Yeah, that's cut to SMF.
All right. So
if you have SMF recording set up, yes. We'll use SMF 111 records, I think, to sort of complement KIX SMF 110 records.
All right. So there's a possibility there of dropping in perhaps an area in TCP/IP. There's now with EWLM, I forgot what the name of the feature is, but the ability to pass data from a client on in. Is that what this is part of?
I didn't hear the full question there.
With EWLM and CSS 3.2, there is a way to share data, and I don't know the specifics, but there's a way to, from an IP client, to share data and to pass that data into CSCS and to use that data in CSCS. More like metadata. It would be IP addresses and those types of things.
Yeah, I did, in my presentation, did I say that we flow EWLM data to KIX. So I believe that is part of the same thing.
So we might be able to use that information then to correlate the two.
That was originally the point of the origin data, was so that we could flow a whole request all the way through. Monitor a whole request all the way through a transaction.
All right, good. All right, that's the right direction. All right, thanks very much.
That's okay.
And with no further questions, I would like to turn the call back over. I actually do apologize. We do have another question from Charles Pizzio.
Quick question again. We have a setup of CISIS transaction gateway right now going to the TS22. We're getting ready to convert to TS32. My question again is on that user exit. If we use EXCI, we use basically EXCI as a connection right now going into that DFH XCURM program, and basically the clients pass a generic Apple, and then we go to that exit to resolve it to a real Apple on the CICS regions. We basically have a cloned environment using Sysplex Distributor to route the work to one side or the other. Now, you're saying there's no equivalent, is that correct, of the DFH XCURM? So, in other words, if we tried to go to IPIC connections, I guess we don't have that functionality to, like you say, check for valid regions or to disperse to a real Apple from a generic Apple?
I think that's pretty much what Michael was asking. Yeah,
right.
There isn't. We don't, with an IP connection, we don't go into DFH XCURM, so there isn't that distribution level at KIX. At the KIX level, because it's DFHXCURM is the KIX EXCI user exit, the user replaceable module. I was going to check for Michael that I believe that since IPIC is an IP based, it flows over an IP connection, that Sysplex Distributor or a product with similar functionality would allow you to distribute work to different KIX regions. But there's no direct replacement for XCURM with IPIC connections.
So if you have that environment set up now under, a Transaction Gateway 5.1, with a TS2.2, and then we go to 7.1 under TS3.2, you can still basically use the EXCI connection?
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's still there.
And that would call the functionality in the XCURM would be there. Of course, we couldn't take advantage of the containers and channels.
That's correct.
Right. Because to me, that's a kind of a showstopper for us. Because, like I said, we got our environment where we can Sysplex Distributor to both sides, and then that's why they on their calls they just pass a generic Apple, and we have the exit, return the real Apple that he wants to go to.
Yeah. KIX Transaction Gateway 7.1 is the first chance we've had to support IPIC connections. It may be that there are developments further down the line to provide similar functions to those that we have with EXCI, with EXCURM exits, DFH-XCURM exits. But IPIC is a different protocol from EXCI, and so it has different functionality and different levels of service. So at the moment, that's how it stands.
Gotcha. Okay, yeah. I was glad the other person brought that up, because that is kind of a real kind of showstopper for us.
Okay, yeah, it is worth noting that with 7.1, we haven't taken away EXCI. EXCI connections are still there and still supported.
Okay, so basically the scenario you have set up now in our environment would work in the new environment without really changes. Okay.
Yes, indeed.
Okay. That's all for me.
And as one more final reminder, I would like to give everyone the opportunity to reach you for questions, and that is *1. I'll pause for a moment to allow you to signal. And with no further questions, I would now like to turn the call back over to Elijah Robertson for any closing remarks.
At this time, we'll conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation. We hope you will all join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's presentation will also be available on the site in the next day or two. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, Colin and Richard, for presenting today.